Hello and welcome in.
Because he shows them the magic and mystery of science in everyday living.
On Science Mixtape on Soho Radio.
Good morning. You're listening to Science Mixtape with me, Matilda Hay. And this week, we're taking you to the pub for a pint of science. Pint of Science is a three-day festival in May which brings some of the most brilliant scientists to the pub where they discuss their latest research and findings with you, the people. Having started in 2013 in just three cities across the UK, 4 years later, it has spread far and wide to include 26 UK cities and 10 different countries. So for our listeners in Japan, Ireland, Canada and Australia, you can look out for it too. Last year, Pint of Science even received a Point of Lights Award from the Prime Minister in recognition of its voluntary work and for making a change in the community. Who'd have thought going to the pub could be so beneficial? Joining me to tell us all about it is Dr. Elodie Chabrol, a neuroscientist and geneticist from UCL and a Pint of Science pioneer. It was her idea to get the international spread of the multi-day pub extrava scienceganza. When she's not organising pub sessions, she's on a mission to cure forms of epilepsy using gene therapy. Welcome, Elodie.
Hi.
How are you doing today?
Good, very good, thank you.
Could you give us a flavour of what we can expect from this year's Pint of Science lineup?
Yeah, so this year, basically, you're going to have the choice between six different topics, plus a bonus one, actually, later. They're spread from physics to neuroscience, so they are in six different categories. So it's beautiful minds, atoms to galaxy, social sciences, and I'm always forgetting to take me out and well, whatever. just check on the website. You will see lots of different subjects that are basically all the science possible, not just physics or biology.
And have you got a particular talk that you're particularly looking forward to?
Yeah, so I'm a neuroscientist, so I hate physics. I don't understand physics, but every year I just run to the physics talks because it's the only way I could understand physics, basically. So yeah, usually I go for something. I think this year in Paris, I've seen something about stars.
Amazing.
So I'm looking forward to that.
Oh, excellent. Yeah, I mean, I was looking at your lineup and I couldn't even choose what my favourite would be. But one of the ones that really caught my attention, it's because it's already sold out. It's called Why Is Everything So Complicated?
Yeah, like, especially why is it so complicated to pick a talk, you know, to pick a subject.
It's a great headline for a talk.
Yeah.
And you've got things like microbes, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. And one that talks about maths being what music and Twitter have in common.
Yeah.
Yeah. I should say the dates. So this is taking place on the 15th, 16th and 17th of May all over the world. And later in the show, we'll be finding out more about Elodie's own talk that she will be doing this year in Paris, as well as her fascinating work in the world of epilepsy. We also have an icy experiment for you, because all good drinks, all good pints need some ice, or at least they should be served cold. So if you want to take part, you just need to get yourself a cup or a bowl that can fit your hand in and some icy water. But first, it's our weekly brain teaser, and this week it's brought to you by our guest producer, Robbie. Take it away.
Hello. So in honour of the global nature of Pint of Science, I have a country-based brain teaser for listeners. So listen carefully. If you take the name of a country and you spell it out all in uppercase letters, can you find me the five countries whose names do not contain any loops in the letters? So that's quite complicated. Let me explain. For example, if you take the country France, so it's got a capital F, and that doesn't contain any enclosed spaces, so that's good. But if you take the capital R, you'll see the top of the R has a loop in it. So that's got an enclosed space. So France is not one of the countries.
Right, okay. But like a capital, so a country with the letter E is fine because the capital E has no spaces.
Yeah, sure.
Even if the lowercase one does.
Exactly. So letters like R, like A, like B, like D, they're no good because they all contain like enclosed spaces.
Oh, this is going to be so
hard. So it's quite a tricky one.
How many do we have to find?
There are five in the world.
Five in the world of all the countries.
All the countries, there are five in the world.
I don't think I even know all the names of the
Yeah.
Geography is not my strong point.
Okay.
great. So if you think you know the answer, you can tweet us at Science Mixtape or at Soho Radio. But now to the mixtape part. Elodie, what is your first song and why?
So my first song is Ilse. I like the way it is going. I've been liking that band for I don't know, 17, 18 years. And I've seen them 2 years ago in London, and it was really amazing. And that song is quite nice for a Saturday morning, so I thought it would be good.
I like your toothy smile. It never fails to beguile. Whichever way the wind is blowing, I like the way this is going. I like the color of your hair. I think we make a handsome pair. I can only see my love growing. I like the way this is going.
There is a type of fruit fly named the cheap date fruit fly because of its sensitivity to ethanol. So basically, when you give it alcohol, it gets drunk really easily.
And that was producer Robbie with the first of his alcohol-themed facts for this show. I literally love that. I love it whenever scientists have a joke in their work. So it's called the cheap date fruit fly.
Yeah, the cheap date fruit fly, because essentially it gets hammered really easily. And there are like loads of other ones as well. So there's the Ken and Barbie fruit flies because they lack external genitalia, just like a Ken and Barbie doll. There's the Maggie fruit fly, which basically has like arrested development. Like it never gets old, it never grows up, just like Maggie in The Simpsons.
But the fruit fly guys usually gave funny names or funny jeans names, or like they are quite fun.
They're
the cool guys in Zone.
Yeah, they're exactly. They are the cool guys with the cool names and everything. Yeah.
So Elodie, you have been involved with Point of Science since its very first year.
Yeah.
How did you get involved? What got you interested in it?
I think it was just like purely random. I got an email saying, oh, we're looking for people to organize the brain section of UCL. And I love events. I love organizing everything. And I really wanted to do something like that. So it was really, really like lots of luck for me to find that email on my inbox. And I called them. And actually the guy that was supposed to do the UCL, so the whole UCL, just decided to quit. So they offered me to do that instead of just brain.
Wow.
And so Misha and Pravin are the two founders of Pint of Science. So I called Misha that day. And it was quite funny because he explained to me how to, you know, what to do and everything. And I was just saying, yeah, yeah, yeah. And then we just hung up and then it happens.
Wow.
And it was good. And he really loves that story. Every time he's introducing me, he just explains that I was just saying yes on the phone.
You were there.
But that was great. I was just waiting for something like that to happen. And I saw that. And it was just...
Because you're really passionate about sort of science communication, aren't you?
Yeah, I love it. But that's the funny thing. I didn't do anything before. And it's with Pint of Science I started realizing I really love it. And it's really kind of drug for me.
What is it that you love so much about it?
I think as a scientist, it gets really frustrating when you say, oh, I'm a scientist. People are looking at you a bit weird sometimes. Either you're going to be too smart, so they cannot talk to you, or you cannot really like reach people. Or they say, oh, don't try to explain to me your subject because I won't understand. And it's a bit frustrating as a job because you always feel like people see you in a way because you're a scientist, you're labeled as weird, you know. Mm. And Pint of Science, really the idea in science communication in general, is just to show them, look, scientists are normal, science is really cool, and it's just to spread the idea that, look, it's cool. Science doesn't have to be weird or complicated. It can actually be super cool.
And working on such cool questions and topics.
Yeah, exactly.
So what was it, because it was your idea to then take it to France the next year, wasn't
it? Yeah.
What was that like, creating the first international one?
That was crazy. So basically we created Pint of Science and we were all scientists. So, you know, we didn't know what to expect. We were just like brainstorming a lot, trying to make it. And then at the end, we were overwhelmed by the success. It was really like, okay, that was great. What should we do now? And I'm French, so obviously I wanted to take the concept in France. So I told them, oh, you know, we could start spreading a bit and I could start France. And they said yes. And actually it was nice because they trusted me to do that. And it was good. It was really difficult at the start because it was a UK concept. So to actually adapt it in France,
I suppose, because it's really pub-focused, isn't it?
Yeah,
and
it is.
You don't have pubs in France.
We have some, but very few. It's just that it was a bit complicated. But, you know, you just have to convince people it's going to work. And it worked. So
just up
I was
your
right.
Class, take it to the bars.
Exactly. Yeah. It was funny. People wanted me to change name, you know, to call it a glass of science or something like that. No, it's pint of science. It stays pint of science. And if you're not happy with that, then that's it.
Yeah, branding is key. Yeah. Now, I like to always ask people for, in terms of their research, like a fieldwork faux pas. But in terms of point of science and setting it up, was there ever a point where something went really wrong?
Yeah. Actually, the first day in Paris, the first ever point of science in Paris.
Oh, wow.
Everything went wrong. But at the end, it was okay. But everything went wrong. So basically, I was supposed to run the night for the first night because the team was a bit scared and I was there. So I offered to do it since I knew exactly what to do. I arrived in the pub and the first thing the pub owner told me was, oh, you didn't confirm the reservation.
Good.
Okay. But you're lucky. It's free. Oh, yeah, because I have 50 people coming.
So, thank God.
Yeah, exactly. So, okay. Well, it's going to be fine. I was a bit stressed, but I started settling down. And he told me, actually, since you didn't confirm the reservation, the tech guy is not here. So there is no way to connect the screen to the computer. So I hope you don't have any slides.
Oh, God.
Okay. Another thing. Don't cry. It's going to be okay. Oh, no.
How long until the event was about to start?
An hour before.
Oh, my God.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it was really, really, like, you know, a case of I'm not going to cry, but inside it's happening. And then I thought, okay, it's going to be fine. I'm just going to tell the speaker to try to do it without slides. Then the speaker arrived and he told me, no problem without slides. Whew, okay. But I'm talking to scientists, right? No.
Oh, no.
I asked him, didn't the team explain? He was like, oh, they told me it was scientists and they would ask questions. And I explained that actually, no, it was public and they were coming to listen to him, not ask questions.
So he hadn't even prepared a talk?
No. So that was the low point until I actually reached a lower point. When I turned around, I saw three guys wearing black t-shirts, black jeans, coming with big cameras and a microphone.
A man in black.
And I asked them, oh, who are you? And they told me, oh, we're on national TV. Oh, my God. That was the low point. I really thought I would cry and I really thought I would collapse. But I thought, okay, so what to do to make it okay? Guys, are going to basically record the fail of Pint of Science. But basically, I told the speaker, okay, this is going to be a public. People are not scientists, so you need to make a talk. So he said, okay. He went in a corner, starting preparing it. No slides, nothing. And then I set up the TV, and actually it went amazing. The speaker was great. The TV thing was actually quite good. So it was okay, but everything went wrong that day, honestly.
Wow.
But like amazing that you just sort of carried on with it rather than kind of cancelling the event.
Yeah,
that's
even, you know, you just have to go with it and find a solution on the spot. So that's the thing. But you're so used to it that you don't even think, oh my God, you're just, okay, what can I do to make it okay? And yeah.
And it's a lot of work organising this event and it's all voluntary. So what do you think motivates you to keep going? Because this is your fourth year.
Yeah, fourth year of not sleeping much. Yeah, it's a lot of work, but I think really when you see the rooms full of people enjoying it, the tweets, everything, I think it just makes you want to do it again. It's really like what I said before. It's really a bit like a drug, honestly. A legal one.
Get addicted to the buzz.
Exactly. But when you see people enjoying it and, you know, you see what you created and you see that, you know, 5,000 or whatever number is going to the events and are going to the events and are actually really enjoying that, that's what keeps me going.
That's amazing. Time for your second song. What have you chosen?
So, this is my favorite French singer that is called Sinclair. He's amazing in live, actually. And this is called Supernova Superstar. So it's a bit linked to science. I like it.
La folie douce est dans l'air. L'énergie monte en un éclair. Le courant parcourt mes épaules. Et mes chaos, mon seul contrôle. Comme
The term hangover only came into modern use, as we know it, in 1904. Before then, the word crapulous was used, which is from Latin crapula, meaning intoxication.
So, we are ready for our experiment. Now, I'm a little anxious about this one because ice is very cold. What are we going to be doing with it?
So the idea of the experiment, a study came out, I don't remember when, but not long ago, explaining that the benefit of swearing. So the experiment was actually volunteers were putting their hands in icy water, and some were allowed to swear, some were not. And you could see that the people swearing could actually hold their hands in icy water for 15 seconds longer than the other ones.
Because that's kind of a really classic pain test, isn't it?
Yeah.
How long can you hold your hand in water
shows
how good your pain resilience is.
Exactly. And so they showed that swearing was actually helping with pain relief.
Wow.
Yeah. And as a French, I swear a lot. This is good. This was a study showing that swearing is beneficial.
And that explains why when I stub my toe, all I want to do is hop around swearing my head off.
And the idea that the guy that created that did that study, actually, the idea came from, I think it was, he hammered his thumb during some gardening or whatever, and he was swearing and he realized, oh, actually swearing makes it better. He's a neuroscientist. And he thought, oh, maybe I can try to see if you can swear or if you can't swear, if there is a difference. So this is how the study came
out. Okay, well, let's get it set up and then you can tell me more about the science behind it. So what do we need?
So we need just any kind of bowl or like stuff to put ice and water.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we've got some cups here in the studio, some pint glasses actually.
Yeah. So put ice on it and water.
Okay, and some extra bits of ice.
Yep.
Okay, so I'm all set to go.
Okay, so what we're going to do, I'm going to time it. We're going to do one session with swearing, one without.
Which are we going to do first?
The without first.
Okay. And we're all going to take part here in the studio?
Yeah.
Great.
Okay, so
we can also test that age-old women have better pain resilience than men.
Oh, yeah, okay, great. Sorry, guys, I'm going to let everyone down here.
Okay, so it's literally just how long can we hold it in for?
Yeah.
Okay, do you want to give us a count?
Okay, one, two, three.
Oh, I want to swear.
No, don't swear. So it's really cold.
God, it is really cold.
Yeah.
Listeners at home, like, please join in. Like, my hand is already feeling quite sore.
Oh, wow. If you're swearing at home, don't.
So, yeah.
Can we get a frostbite from doing this experiment?
Nah. Maybe. I don't know.
You'd have to have
Oh, that's really painful.
It's
weird how cold can be so painful.
Yeah.
Okay, I need to think of something
Which part is the most painful? For me, it's the palm. My palm is really sat on a chunk of ice right here, and it's really...
Oh, really?
Mm.
Really not enjoying it. I don't really feel what's painful for me, because it's numb.
I got, like, shooting pain going into my thumb now.
I've got pain in my soul. This is really bad.
I'm also really competitive. Yeah, you don't want to be the first to withdraw.
I mean, I've got all of mankind on, like, you know, the male of the species, you know, counting on me here, so...
Guys, it's almost a minute. We're good.
Woo!
Yeah.
Has my hand gone white yet?
It's really painful.
Ow!
That's the moment I think we would need to swear, because it's the moment you really want to withdraw your hand.
Yeah, like the sensation's like changing now, like my fingers are going completely numb.
Yeah, I think I might withdraw.
Yeah, I feel like as soon as one of us breaks, we're all going
to
break.
Yeah, but no one wants to. So
Can I say other words apart from swearing?
You could, but apparently other words are not as beneficial as swearing.
So if I shout bananas, that's
you can try. You can try.
Bananas? No, it's not helping.
Bananas? No.
Doesn't work.
Oh my god, it's tingling. My hand is actually like weirdly tingling now.
Oh,
I can't feel my fingers.
This is pretty good. I mean, this is longer than I thought it would be.
Yeah, we're really, really good. It's a minute and 45 seconds.
This could be the longest science mixtape ever.
Maybe we should put another song on.
We should do this while we play a song, right?
No, but the whole point is the swearing.
Okay,
people need to hear that part.
We can leave the swearing in over the song, it's fine.
2 minutes.
Oh, God.
I think I'm going to...
Okay,
now.
Yeah, I think I've had enough. Ow, okay.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I know, I had to leave my hand in 5 seconds longer.
Literally.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Oh, it's so numb. It's so nice.
Let's take a closer.
My hand is like a different...
Yeah.
A shade. Different colour to my other one. It's like... It's gone white.
Oh.
Okay, I'm just doing some... Oh, my God, it's still tingling. Oh, okay. We're all doing some flexing here in the studio.
So 2 minutes and 30 seconds.
We've got to do that all again.
Yeah.
Okay.
Do we do it with the other hand?
Yeah.
In order to,
yeah, because
right?
if you, I don't know if you want to lose your hand.
No,
but
exactly. I will lose my other hand.
Especially, it's going to be so cold already. Okay.
Let's go.
Are you ready, guys? So this time we can swear.
We're allowed to swear, right?
Yeah, we're allowed to swear.
Anything.
Listeners at home,
French
do not worry. We are beeping these out.
Yeah. 3, 2, 1. That's already quite cold. I don't know if brain thinking, no, I don't want that again.
Oh, I feel like because it's new, it's like a really, it's like it hasn't gone numb yet. It's a really fresh pain.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so you just have to
Yeah.
But I think it's gonna be like better and better with the when the pain is gonna be very very strong. Saying it's gonna feel really good.
I think it's because I know what's coming and I can hear.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, why did we go for so long the last time? 2 minutes.
That's, yeah,
really,
2 minutes.
Why did we do that? Okay, teach me some French swear words, please.
Putain.
Puta.
Puta.
Yeah. That won't have the same impact for me though, right? Because I don't have the same meaning.
I'm not sure because
it.
I think it's not the same meaning, so it's not going to be the same emotions.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's the emotions. So on the paper they were saying probably emotions are linked to swear words. So you feel a relief when you're actually saying swear words. So if you say swear words in another language, it might not work, but oh, putain, it's cold. That works well. The cool thing, though, is that I'm living in the UK now, so
works
as well.
You actually have a larger swearing vocabulary.
Yeah,
it's good. Gone into your psyche.
Oh, minute 20.
God, we're not even...
I
think when it gets really complicated to hold, it's the moment you need to swear a lot.
Yeah.
It's
when you're at that moment of
breaking.
I feel like my left hand's more sensitive than my right. This is really painful.
Oh man!
Why did I get that idea?
My other hand's not recovered yet. Yeah.
This is just torture.
Oh,
you're welcome. Saturday morning torture.
And so, do they think they know why swearing helps to like relieve pain?
They don't exactly know. They just think that swearing is linked to emotions, and it might just, you know, help with emotions and dealing with pain and everything. But it's really swearing. That's quite funny. It's really swearing. Another word doesn't make it the same.
It's the connotations really, attached to the swear word and the emotion attached.
Yeah,
to
but
the
it's
swear
quite
word.
A new study, so they might actually go deeper in the thing.
For any listeners at home who are trying this experiment, please do not go beyond 5 minutes. I mean, we haven't got anywhere close to that, but I think for safety reasons, I've read that 5 minutes is the maximum you should allow your hand in ice.
Yeah.
Guys, we're past it.
Are we past it?
We've passed it.
Wow.
What, already?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
F*** me.
That must have really worked. And it really doesn't feel that bad.
No, it doesn't feel... It started feeling really bad.
It
and
did,
then
yeah.
And then f***ing good, okay?
Yeah. I can leave in here for f***ing ever.
Almost 3 minutes.
No way.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, I can actually feel it hurting a little bit more.
See, now you have a perfect explanation for why swearing is so good.
Oh.
You can say, we've tried. Yeah. Swearing is good.
Yeah. I wonder if it's one of those things where if there's somebody who swears all the time versus somebody who only swears occasionally, the person who swears occasionally has like, I don't know, that'd be an interesting
maybe
experiment.
Yeah, like a bigger threshold to pain or something like that.
Ooh. Okay, it's getting really painful now.
Yeah, it is.
I think we've proved this one conclusively.
Yeah, 3 minutes and 30 seconds. I think we can say swearing is good.
Yes,
that was a whole, minute longer. On that note, let's go to your next song.
Oh yeah, that's a reggae group that I really, really like, and it's very old. I was listening to it when I was in high school. It's called Kader Redim, and the song is called Miss Millie. Babylon, after the police raid in Ashantita, so he started the love story of those two rebels. Mr. Ryder, Rupert, P. Rocks, Teddy Beat. He came from another school when he landed.
music. My love is playing music aloud for you. Say, you honor us to make people happy. God say, with me lit in a jail with you, we're gonna be Babylon. After the police raid in our shanty town, so we started the love story of those two rebels.
Hippocampus is the scientific name given to the little fish, commonly known as the seahorse. This name has also been given to the part of the brain that is shaped somewhat like a seahorse. And because the cerebral hippocampus is resistant to damage from epileptic seizures, the National Society for Epilepsy chose the seahorse for its mascot. And they named it Caesar, after the Roman Emperor Julius Caesar, who was believed to have had epilepsy.
I didn't know that.
That's an amazing fact.
Yeah, that's really cool fact.
Well done, producer Robbie.
Yeah, I'm going to brag with that when I go back to the lab on Tuesday.
Happy to help, yeah.
Do you know Caesar?
Yeah.
Yeah, because epilepsy is way more common than I thought it was. It's 1% of the population, apparently. It's the most common neurological disease.
Yes, it's very, very common.
And what I didn't know before speaking to you was that there's actually different types. I've always just thought you've got one type of epilepsy, which is the kind you see in the films where someone kind of has a fit and they're on the floor and their muscles are spasming and they might be foaming at the mouth. But there's about 40 types, isn't there?
Yeah, the thing is, usually we talk about epilepsy as epilepsies, so it's a group of diseases, not just one.
Oh, right.
And it's just that commonly, you know that seizure, that's the most widely known. But you have so many symptoms that are epilepsy.
So what are the other symptoms that you can have?
To understand it, to understand the symptoms, you just have to understand that brain is basically a big circuit and that epilepsy is a problem of circulation of electricity.
In the brain.
In the brain. And if it happens in just a small part, it's called partial epilepsy. If it happens in the whole brain, like the big seizure, then you get bigger symptoms. So wait,
what's the definition of a seizure? Like what has to happen for a seizure to occur?
It's like an electrical storm taking the neurons. So all the neurons, instead of neurons are firing, so they are talking to each other with electricity. And normally not all of them at the same time are actually active. Mm-hmm. And if too many are active at the same time, then basically you have a storm in the brain.
Exactly, yeah.
And depending where it's happening, then the symptoms are different. For example,
sense.
In temporal lobe, you might have auras, auditory auras, so you might hear voices.
Oh, wow.
Or your seizure might be triggered by sounds. Like when I was in PhD, I had two fascinating papers that I loved. One was a case study of this guy that explained that every time he had a seizure, it was when his girlfriend was calling him from a place he wasn't expecting. So, for example, if he was not in the same room as his girlfriend, and she would be calling him, he would have a seizure.
Like calling him on the phone?
Oh, no, like just like being like, oh, you know, James, and then boom, seizure.
So what kind of seizure would he have?
So he has the temporal lobe one, so basically triggered by a sound, by surprise. But I really thought of the girlfriend, and I thought, can you imagine? And it was absence seizures, so the symptoms were just basically a loss of conscience for a few seconds. So
he'd like an off switch, and if she called his name, he would just switch off.
Yeah. That's so weird.
So can you imagine having a boyfriend every time you're like, James, boom. That's really weird, but that's epilepsy. So, you know, it must have caused a lot of arguments before finding out it's epilepsy.
I was going to say, how did he work it out if he can't remember switching off for a few seconds?
I think probably the girlfriend must have seen that. And then you go to the neurologist and you explain, and then they look and they see it's actually a seizure and it's actually epilepsy. But can you imagine all the arguments they might have had before finding out it's epilepsy?
And what was it? Was it just her, or was it other people?
I think it was other people, but it was mostly common
her.
With her.
Wow,
which is crazy. And another paper that fascinated me. So I was working on this auditory kind of epilepsy when I was doing my PhD, which is caused by an unknown gene.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever. And that paper, so it's an Italian group that started to read all the trials of Joan of Arc. And they explained, look, you know, people think she's schizophrenic, but she might actually be epileptic.
Just for anyone who doesn't know, who is Joan of Arc?
So Joan of Arc, I don't know the year, but she was basically a French fighter, and she was quite well known, and she got burned.
She was burned alive at the stake,
wasn't
she?
Yeah, because at the trial, they thought she was a witch, basically. And then some people said, no, she was actually schizophrenic. So when she says she was fighting and saying she was hearing voices that told her to do that or to say that and everything. So
were they religious voices?
Yes.
Yes. So she's like hearing God talking to her.
Yes. Actually it was God. And she was burnt. She was convicted of witchery, you say?
Witchcraft, yeah. Witchcraft. This was back in it's like the 1400s, early 1400s.
Yeah, exactly. So. That's the thing. Some people at that time had seizures and they were actually like as possessed people. So they think that she's epileptic.
Wow, and she was hearing these voices because of her seizures.
Yes, exactly.
That's
and,
so interesting.
And at that time, you were sealing letters with a hair and wax. So they are looking for hairs from Joan of Arc to actually sequence and see if they have a mutation in that gene.
Wow.
Which is quite cool. That was the gene I was working on.
So is epilepsy always caused by genetic factors?
No, genetic factors are a very small part of epilepsy. It's just that it's really good because it helps us pin down the molecular mechanisms. So it's really good to have those forms. Mm. But most of the epileptic forms are actually not known. You can have epilepsy just like that. You know, you have no reason and you are epileptic. But you also have reasons linked to an injury, like brain tumor incident, you know, a car accident or something like that. So epilepsy can arrive in like lots of different.
I guess the brain's so complicated. I can imagine there are lots of different things that could set off.
Yeah, exactly. The thing with epilepsy, it's basically just a misbalance in the communications between neurons. So everything that is creating, you know, a tiny misbalance might create epilepsy in your brain. So every brain can have a seizure. The question is just, what's the threat?
But you work specifically on ones that seem to have a genetic cause.
I was. Now I'm trying to cure. So I did my PhD on the genetic forms of epilepsy. And now I moved to focal forms of epilepsy. So I'm trying to cure those. Because basically epilepsy is easily curable, with medication for 70% of the patients. Then if it doesn't work, you can try surgery. It's not a lot.
They like cut the bit between
so
your hemispheres.
Either they do that or the most common is actually to remove the hippocampus. That's the
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh, wow. Take out the seahorse.
Exactly, taking out the seahorse. But you have to be sure that, you know, the seizures are actually starting in the hippocampus to remove it. And some patients have epilepsy, but they cannot be treated. And they have a focal one, meaning starting in a really small part of the brain. Mm. But if it's too close from the speech area of movement and everything, it might be too dangerous to actually go with surgery. Mm. And my work right now is trying to find alternative ways of curing. So with gene therapy.
Gene therapy, yes. Yeah. So tell me more about this because it sounds fascinating.
So gene therapy, the idea is basically to inject a gene. So brain, epilepsy, anything.
But you're not injecting it like with a needle and a syringe, like a normal injection, are you?
We are.
Oh, you are?
We are, except where the gene is going to be transported by a virus.
So you inject the virus?
So we're injecting the virus containing a gene.
But into the brain?
Into the brain.
Wow.
The thing is, the virus has nothing bad. It's just basically, it would be like a car, you know. So you put someone in. So the virus, you put a
self-driving car.
Exactly. It's just because it's the derivative of HIV virus. But what we like is just the way it's infecting.
So the way that it gets into the cell.
Exactly. And like dropping the genes in the cells and everything. But it's not a bad virus. It's just, you know, carrying it basically. A way of transportation for the gene. And and then we try to find a gene that we think might work and to actually help with this balance. That's the idea.
And it goes in and goes into the cells in the brain.
Exactly. It goes into the cells and then the cells are just producing it like it was their own. So if it's a normal gene that they already have, they will produce more of that. And the idea is to try to basically help the brain going back to normal.
Wow. That's so cool what you can do nowadays.
Yeah, it's really, really... That was my dream project because I was a geneticist, so I really like, you know, everything that is linked to genes. And so I like to see... Well, in PhD, I saw mutations. So I was basically having the DNA of patients and I was sequencing it and then I found some mutations. So it was really cool to be actually able to tell people, oh, you have epilepsy because of that gene.
And now we can kind of fix it.
And the cool thing is that gene therapy is like the other way of the
they've got a mutation, you give them the unmutated gene back.
Yeah, you can, yeah.
Wow. Oh, brilliant. Song number 4.
Song number four. Oh yeah, that's Ásgeir. So that's an Icelandic singer. I love Iceland. So this is why I picked this one. And it's really nice and quite mellow for Saturday morning.
This old house is full of leaks and mold on the walls. Dragons of the night are lurking in the shadows. Torrents wash away.
Nineteenth-century biologist Sir John Lubbock experimented on ants by getting them drunk. He discovered that sober ants would carry their drunken ant comrades back to the nest. But if the ants were drunken strangers from a different colony, the sober ants would throw them in a ditch.
News just in. Asian elephants pass a new self-awareness test.
There could be life in one of the oceans in our solar system, according to NASA.
50 new species of spider discovered in Australia.
Dutch men may no longer be the tallest in the world.
And bees may not feel pain.
Oh my God, fascinating. So tell me about a life in the Saturn's moons.
Yes, yeah, so this is an amazing finding that's just been found by the Cassini spacecraft. They found molecular hydrogen, which is one of the essential parts of life on Earth, has been found on one of Saturn's moons called Enceladus. So the hydrogen was found when the spacecraft Cassini, it flew through one of the giant plumes of liquid that erupt out of the subsurface ocean of Saturn's sixth largest moon. So it's an amazing finding. So while they haven't found, you know, proof that life exists there, this is one of the key components. They found the building block. And it's kind of poetic because Cassini, which has been out there for 10 years now, is about...
Like we've known it. Oh, no, the satellite.
The satellite, the spacecraft has been out there for 10 years now. And it's just about to go on its final mission. Its final mission is going to happen on April 26th. So everyone can tune in. It's happening very, very soon. And it's going to begin a series of dives through the 1,500-mile wide gap between Saturn and its rings. And after that, Cassini will crash and actually burn up. So it's kind of goodbye to Cassini and hopefully thanks for all the fish.
A bit of Douglas Adams reference for you there. That's so cool. So it's kind of like, I guess it's running out of fuel and stuff, and this is its kamikaze.
This is it. This is the end of it.
Suicide mission.
It's sad.
It is kind of sad, right? Yeah. But it's found so much stuff. It's been like a really fascinating thing.
And will it be taking measurements on its final dive?
Yeah, exactly. So it's going to, as it goes down, it will be transmitting right to the last second.
It's quite funny, but I think we're getting quite attached to like...
You do. You kind of humanize them, right?
Yeah,
you
attach it's kind like of Rosetta, like you know, the mission and
exactly.
All the little robots going and traveling. We feel really sad when they crash.
I just think of all the scientists sat in the control room, like watching their watching their baby,
their creations. Yeah. They worked so hard on.
Exactly.
So that's the 26th.
That's the 26th of April. So everyone, if you go to NASA's website, they'll be live streaming lots of this stuff. So you'll be able to see it all happen there.
That's great. My story this week was about the Asian elephants. And this is so cool. So I studied psychology. And a really interesting question is kind of, are animals conscious and are they aware of themselves? And the current test that we have for that is looking in the mirror. It's called the mirror recognition test. And you put a dot on your forehead or on the forehead of a child or an animal, and then it's when they look at their reflection, do they realise it's them and realise they have a dot and sort of touch the dot and wonder what it is? And so young children around kind of 3-4 can do this, and so can chimpanzees, dolphins, magpies, and elephants. But other critics have argued that this would really only work for species that are used to being very visual. We're very visual species, but not all other animals are. They rely on other senses. And so they've come up with a new test, and this test is of body awareness, and it's supposed to show self-understanding as well. So they've done this with Asian elephants, and what they did is they got a mat, and they tied a stick with a bit of rope to the mat. And then they get the elephant to stand on the mat and ask it to pass the stick to the experimenter, but the rope is too short. So it can only pass the stick if the mat could move as well. So does it work out that it needs to get off the mat so that the mat can move as well? And most of them did. And that is so cool because it shows they're aware that their body is on the mat and preventing them from completing their task.
Wow.
So that's really, really exciting. And if they can take this further and devise it for other species, we might start seeing a lot more self-awareness in other species that we haven't seen so far. Very cool.
And I guess it kind of shows like the... you know, again, the importance of picking the right test to prove what you're doing, right?
It's
like, you know, the mirror test is great for like, as you say, like sort of visually aware kind of animals like us, but other animals, a different test may actually get to, you know, prove something really important.
Elodie, tell me about these spiders.
So they found 50 new species of spider in Australia. 50 is a lot.
In one go. Oh,
this is crazy. I'm thinking about, you know, the guys that actually went on the mission that. Because one of my friends is doing that in New Caledonia. And 50 is a lot. And basically, you're in the jungle or forest or whatever. And you're, oh, a new spider. Cool. And especially those ones, they are not mini spiders. They are quite big ones.
Yeah, these
and
are
quite scary ones.
The size of your hand almost, right?
Yeah, something like that. So they found a peacock spider, apparently, that is doing a courtship dance. Which is quite cool. Makes it a bit less scary. Maybe. I'm not even sure.
I can't really imagine a spider dancing.
Yeah, I don't really know.
Top hat, cane.
Yeah, exactly.
I suppose it's got 8 legs to work with.
Yeah, exactly.
That must be, quite cool break dancing with 8 legs. So they found that. What else? Jumping spiders. Anyway, I find it really disturbing.
Well done, Australia.
Yeah, exactly.
You can keep your spiders.
Yeah, 50 new species. It's crazy. Australia has already so many dangerous species of everything. Yeah. It's really crazy. But the really, really good thing is that it was done in a conserved area, and it's really important for showing that those areas are really important to be saved and kept. So, yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. Robbie, what were you saying about bees and pain? Talking about insects.
Are they swearing?
Talking about, exactly.
I was wondering, are the bees actually swearing?
Can bees swear? That's an experiment that needs to be done. No, but it's an interesting question. You know, we know that complex animals can feel pain, but what about insects? So when you swat a fly, does it feel pain in that instance? And researchers at the Queensland Brain Institute in the University of Queensland in Australia, again, where all the insects are, they did a couple of experiments. So they attached little clips to the legs of some bees. So it's a bit like, imagine somebody's pinching your arm. And they also did an experiment, quite a gruesome one, where they amputated one of the middle legs of a bee. Okay. So they had these bees who were sort of in various states of sort of stress, and they had some bees which were fine. And then they offered the bees, in a free sort of experiment, they could choose to actually feed from a feeder containing pure sucrose solution, so like sugar water, or from a container containing sucrose solution, so sugar water, but mixed with morphine, which is a painkiller.
Yeah.
And the researchers, the hypothesis was, if bees feel pain, the injured ones will more than the bees that were fine, the injured ones will go for the morphine solution, right? They go for something which would give them some relief. And actually they found they drank the same amount. So it's kind of an interesting experiment. They found the bees that were pinched, they drank exactly the same amount as the bees that were completely cool. And the bees that had their legs amputated, they drank more stuff in general, but they didn't drink more morphine than normal sucrose. They just drank more in general. So it's kind of, there's obviously more work to be done. But at this point, it kind of indicates that bees maybe don't feel pain the same way that we do. However, I was speaking to my sister, who's a zoologist, earlier today, and she kind of refutes this because she thinks that pain is a very complicated thing, and just because something doesn't want morphine doesn't mean they're not feeling pain.
Especially, one question is that they don't know before morphine is going to be good.
Sure.
So it's quite difficult to say,
quickly does it work?
Yeah, exactly.
Work.
And you know, they go for...
Ibuprofen takes an hour to kick in, right?
Yeah, no, but and how do they know, you know, the difference between the drinks?
Yeah, how do they know I'm drinking this and I feel better, therefore I should drink that?
Yeah. Like,
that's quite a cognitive jump.
Exactly. Although I feel like I was told when I was doing A-level biology that insects don't feel pain because their nervous systems aren't as advanced as ours.
Yeah.
And again, pain is a perception. And I know, I remember doing experiments with locusts and we like beheaded them and...
were they swearing as you did that?
Yeah, like, maybe they were like...
But before we beheaded them, we put them in a test tube to see how they responded to a hotter environment. So we sort of gently heated it, like,
only gently. And they did get a bit frantic and move around. And our teacher just said it was, well, they're responding to the fact that that's a bad environment for them and they know they need to move away.
Yeah.
But they don't feel pain.
Yeah, they can feel, I think they can feel temperature, but not necessarily pain.
Yeah.
So it's a bit different. But.
I guess what this experiment's trying to do is take that and provide some sort of empirical evidence show that, right?
It's like trying to prove consciousness. Like it's a very hard thing to prove if the animal can't talk to you.
Yeah, unless we can teach them to swear. That's what we need to do, right?
Maybe they're just swearing like crazy. They don't need morphine.
That's what buzzing is, it turns out.
They get angry and they buzz more. And then the final story... This I just really like this because it's a really great show of how nature and nurture can kind of work together. So Dutchmen are famed for being the tallest in the world. They average 183.8 centimetres, which is just over 6 feet. And that's the average. But there's new data that suggests that men from Bosnia and... Okay, I really struggle with this word, but Bosnia and Herzegovina...
Oh, yeah.
That's good. That's it.
could be even taller. Already in one of the regions of that country, men on average reached 184.5 centimetres. So they did some genetic profiling. And there is a specific genetic profile that's associated with height in men. And 30% of Dutchmen have this profile, but 70% of the men in Herzegovina had it. And what they think is that the diet of people in that country is not quite as good as the Dutch diet. So they eat a bit less protein. Generally, it's a poorer country and also has a higher Muslim population and they can't eat pork. And animal protein is associated with height more than protein from plants. So they think that if they had the same diet as the Dutch men, they would actually be a whole 2 inches taller rather than only a quarter of an inch taller.
Wow.
So there you go. They've stolen the crown.
Yeah, exactly. So if you're going to form a basketball team, that's where you need to head, right? Get out there, feed them protein and take the NBA by storm.
Absolutely. Elodie, your fifth song.
Yeah, it's my girl from Otis Redding.
Why have you chosen this one?
I had that at my wedding.
Oh.
But I'm divorced, but I still like it. Enjoy.
English pubgoers used to have a whistle baked into their ceramic beer jugs. When they wanted a refill, they blew the whistle. Hence why some people believe that this is the origin of the phrase, to wet your whistle, which is an English phrase for all the people who are international. To wet your whistle means, can I have another beer, please?
Cool.
Now, Elodie, this year at Point of Science, you are doing a talk.
Yes.
And it's about oxytocin.
Yes, it is. It's about love, sex and oxytocin.
So what is oxytocin?
So oxytocin is a neurotransmitter and a hormone in the brain that controls...
So the hormones like in the body and the neurotransmitters in the
brain. Yeah, and that controls lots of things. If you Google oxytocin, it's involved in everything, basically.
But I've always known that it's nicknamed like the cuddle hormone, right?
Yeah, exactly. So basically oxytocin has been found to do lots of different things, but the major ones are when you give birth, you have a surge of oxytocin, and so it's the bonding hormone, so cuddling, human birth and everything. And it's been shown in prairie voles to be linked with fidelity.
Go on.
Yeah, quite interesting. So my talk is going to be about that because it's fascinating, I think. So you have two types of prairie voles. You have the prairie voles and the meadow voles. Prairie voles are very, very faithful. They're made for life.
Monogamous.
Yes. And the meadow ones are completely not faithful. They don't make for life.
They just sleep around.
They are scoundrels.
We call them the bastard voles. And so researchers found that quite interesting, and they looked for the difference in the brain, what's happening. And actually, they realized that there is more oxytocin in the brain of the prairie voles, so the ones that are mating for life, once they meet, there is like a huge level of oxytocin, a wave of oxytocin happening.
So it's actually from the mating process that they
get
the oxytocin.
Yeah, it's the mating process. And
I think, then it says, I'm staying with you.
Yeah, forever. So it has to be good. Let's hope it was good. And what they did is that they tried to block the oxytocin in the brain of prairie voles that became bastard voles, actually.
Oh, so really?
It's quite interesting.
So it really is responsible for that feeling of
exactly.
bonding and attachment and wanting to stay with someone.
Exactly, and humans apparently it's the same. So cuddling is helping with a bit of oxytocin wave, so that's why you feel more attached when you cuddle and everything.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah.
And why did you pick this as your topic?
I used to do that. Actually, Alistair Jennings was invited to one of the Science Mixtape.
He is a Science Mixtape alumni.
Yes. So we did a video about that with him, and that's how I got involved in the whole oxytocin love and everything. And then we went together to a festival. We did a Pint of Science on that, and I just loved the subject. So I have a stuffed prairie vole, and I have a plastic brain, and I just love the subject. So I just quite like talk about that.
And does your talk have an interactive element at all? Because quite often you do experiments in your talks.
Yeah,
don't you?
I'm going to experiment on people, which is the part I love.
Oh, listeners, you can't see, but she's got a wicked glint in her eye.
So basically, oxytocin is linked to also self-confidence, you know, like love, bonding.
I didn't know it was linked to self-confidence.
Yeah, they actually found that, you know.
I guess I could see that as like attachment being like a feeling of security,
exactly.
right? And when you feel secure, you feel confident.
Exactly. So the idea is that I'm going to go and do a blinded experiment on the people there with some A and B vials, and one is going to be with oxytocin, the other one with water, and I'm going to ask people to spray them
on
themselves and tell me at the end of the night how they felt, if they fell in love,
maybe with the person next to them.
Yeah, I just hope they're not going to mate in the room, but you know, don't do like prairie voles, please.
This experiment's getting out of hand. Yeah.
So you can actually get the hormone in like a liquid form.
Yeah, in Amazon on the US.
The way from America.
Yeah.
Okay. It's like a real life love potion.
Exactly.
Oh, you have to let us know your results.
Yeah.
We'll tweet them out. Yes. That's fascinating. So we have come to the end of our show. We only have time left for our brain teaser. Now, I mean, I have been talking a lot and not doing loads of thinking.
I've tried, but
I can't even come up with one.
I was quite proud of Italy, and then you said A as a loop, so then
yeah, I'm afraid Italy's not, it's not in there. So it looks like we've had a few people who have managed to get, a lot of people who've got two and three, a few people have got four. I'll read out the five now, and if at home, you can give yourself a pat on the back if you managed to get all of these. So the first one is a small island. It's called Fiji.
Of course,
So Fiji. We got another one, which is more islands. This one's a really complicated one. This is a hard one. The Seychelles.
Oh, yes. I would never have thought of that.
Yeah,
the Seychelles. This one's a little easier. So I'm thinking of a country in South America. It's kind of long and thin.
Chile.
It's Chile.
Ah, yeah.
It's Chile as well.
Of course.
And then we've got, in the Middle East, we've got Yemen.
Yeah.
And the last one, and this is the one that I always forget, and this is one I actually had to look up when I remembered this brain teaser, it's Liechtenstein.
Oh, it's not that far.
Yeah, exactly. Liechtenstein. So there you go. Those are the five. Fiji, the Seychelles, Chile, Yemen, and Liechtenstein. So well done if you got all five.
Yeah, well done. So much better than me.
Which are any of those?
I'm going to give myself a half point for getting Chile with a clue.
Yeah, I didn't even get one.
Maybe not this year, but maybe Pint of Science will make it to the Seychelles and Chile and Yemen and Liechtenstein.
Yeah, you made it to Brazil, hadn't you?
Yeah, we made it to Brazil and actually France. We're also in La Réunion, which is
really close.
Yeah, it's a very nice island. So it's part of France because it's French, but
yeah.
Pint of Science in La Réunion. It's quite nice.
Definitely going to a talk that.
Yeah, exactly. So Monday I'm going to be in Paris and Tuesday I'm going to be in La Réunion.
And then I'll need a day off.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll just stay there. Elodie, thank you so, so much for joining us. It's been fascinating.
You're welcome. It's really nice to be there.
And just as a reminder to everyone listening, Pint of Science is 15th, 16th, 17th of May. Where can they find more information?
On the website, www.pintofscience.com for all the countries, or .co.uk for the UK one.
And they can book tickets through the website, yes?
Yes, exactly. Book tickets through the website and hurry because tickets are getting
already selling out.
So fast. That
I'm never going to find out why things are so complicated.
Yeah, exactly. if you like an evening, just book it.
Brilliant. And what is your final song?
my final song is Don't Stop Me Now, because that's the mood I'm in when I'm organizing Pint of Science. A bit like...
I guess it's so close. You've only got a month left, right?
Yeah.
You must be really gearing up to it.
Yeah, yeah, it is. It is. Actually, it's been a month. It's actually quite crazy before we put everything online. And now it's exciting as well, because it's coming closer and we see the tickets being sold and everything. So, yes, it's like being a bunny with LSD.
Lots of oxytocin.
And yeah. You were saying, this song reminds you of your mode.
Yeah, exactly. That's like when I listen to it, I really feel like, yeah, this is me when I prepare Pint of Science. Just like, don't stop me now.
Don't stop me now. Having a good time, having a good time.
I'm a shooting star leaping through the sky like a tiger, defying the laws of gravity. I'm a racing car passing by like Lady Godiva. I'm gonna go, 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 there's no stopping me. I'm burning through the sky, yeah. 200 degrees, that's why they call me Mr. Fahrenheit. I'm traveling at the speed of light. I wanna make a supersonic man.
For more Science Mixtape, you can find our shows on Audioboom, iTunes, or any other podcast provider. Or join us live every Saturday at 10 a.m. on Soho Radio, recently voted the best online radio station in the world. Science.